Support for State Street comes from Salt Lake Community College. With 8 campuses and flexible scheduling options, SLCC provides access to learning for Utah's future employees. More information on community involvement at slcc.edu/community.
I like to say that the big snows that came early in 2023 were the worst thing that happened to Great Salt Lake because it made people complacent. And the legislature in Utah had been doing so many cool things, passing water bills that circumvented homesteading era water laws, you know. And I think we lost that momentum when we got all that snow during the legislative session. So it doesn't mean that it's an emergency anymore. And so they backed off.
That's director of the Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster University, Bonnie Baxter.
Utah is having its worst snowpack on record, and that can have big consequences for Utah's reservoirs and the state's crown jewel, Great Salt Lake. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Hugh Ericard Bell. This week on State Street, it's been 4 years since 2022's Year of Water at the legislature. So we're checking in on how much progress the lawmakers have made on the Great Salt Lake.
We talked with water experts and the state's number one guy on all things Great Salt Lake to find out if it's all doom and gloom, or if there's a reason to be hopeful in 2026.
Earlier this month, a report predicted that in just 5 short years, the Great Salt Lake will completely disappear. Let me be absolutely clear. We are not going to let that happen.
That was Governor Spencer Cox during his State of the State address in 2023. It's now 2026. We know this winter hasn't been what we hoped it would be, and we've heard this rallying cry before. Utah has been focused on water conservation and Great Salt Lake for years now.
Utah is one of the driest states in the country already. Ironically, I actually grew up in the driest state in Australia, and through the early 2000s, we had what was called the millennial drought, and my mom had like shower buckets in the shower for the water runoff that she would use on her agapanthus.
Her aga what now?
Agapanthus. They are a plant that look very pretty in the spring. But back to Utah, where the danger is, Sean, we're also one of the fastest growing states. And so there is that question. How are we going to have enough water to support all of these people?
We are dealing with some very difficult hydrology. There's no getting around that.
That's water attorney Emily Lewis. Now, our producer, Caroline Ballard, she sat down with her to help break everything down for us from a legal perspective.
It is a challenge, but also kind of a call to action to get innovative, to get smart, to get creative and see what we can do, because there just really aren't any other options.
So going back to this so-called Year of Water in 2022, Governor Cox signed over 15 bills relating to water conservation that year. Lots of talk about generational progress on water, things like incentivizing farmers to send some of their water downstream, improved water metering methods, and $40 million was allocated to help our greatest, saltiest lake.
So here's how Emily explained how these changes are coming along.
To get water to the lake and use these new laws and legislations does take some time to actually work with engineers, figure out what our distribution system looks like, work through the process, you know, kind of tweak things as we go along. And so I think that the last couple of years have really been in the meat of getting the work done. And now we're at a new place where we can kind of like make improvements and even kind of speed up the process from here.
You know, what I found interesting was when the conversation turned to whether all of these efforts are actually paying off.
Yeah, and she really emphasized that this is a generational fix, not something that will just be solved in a few years with a few laws.
What we're seeing now today is kind of a lot of those programs and those policies in action. And I think that the Great Salt Lake Watershed Enhancement Trust has done an incredible job of securing a lot of water for the lake in a very short period of time. The reality is we need a lot more water for the lake.
But, you know, something that's happened really recently is Utah has acquired a little company called U.S. Magnesium and its water rights for a princely sum of $30 million. And that deal comes with the rights to 144,000 acre-feet of water.
Finally, Sean, I can use my agricultural science degree right here. So, an acre-foot is how much water it would take to fill up 1 acre of land with 1 foot of water.
Sounds about right to me.
I dug deep for that one. Thank you very much, Professor Pitchford, if you're listening.
So I'm trying to imagine what that would look like. Zion National Park in southern Utah is around 148,000 acres. So imagine for me if we covered nearly the whole park in 1 foot of water. That's how much water we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes to show that 144,000 acre feet from U.S. Magnesium, that is really nothing to scoff at.
No, not at all. And Emily says it could make a real impact.
Having a large producer like that on the lake out of production and having the availability of their water rights is just one more tool in the tool bucket. And I think that it's a really innovative and market-based way for the state to enter, to kind of put a new way to get water, or I guess really preserve water in the lake.
We should note that projections from the ChemC Gardner Policy Institute say we need around 800,000 acre feet added per year to get the lake back to healthy levels. But, you know, Emily Lewis does deal in state and federal laws. Scientists, though, Sean, they deal in laws of physics, chemistry, and biology. So I went and sat down with a scientist and director of Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster University, Bonnie Baxter, and here's how serious her and her colleagues are seeing the issue.
We may get to a point where, you know, the governor has to declare a state of emergency. Like, the dust could get that bad, right? If there's been a lot of talk about a timeline for when the lake might dry up, and I'll just say that it's going to be a problem long before all the water is gone.
Well, during our conversation, I did want to address the elephant in the room. I mean, recently science has come under fire, particularly on a national stage. But climate change has been debated for decades now. And here's what she had to say about how she brings her issues and what she's seeing in her lab to the lawmakers.
Scientists are really good at monitoring the problem, but it's very challenging for me to get more water to the lake because I don't have control of those levers. And this is when it's really important that I speak to people in the legislature or government agencies. It's important that not only you speak about what's happening, but that you translate it to make it digestible.
An interesting tidbit that Bonnie told me was this does also come back to our own backyard.
The easy thing is to get water to the lake in ways that are productive, where all stakeholders are involved and farmers get compensated and municipalities participate and everybody does their part. You know, there's no reason why anybody should have grass in Salt Lake City, for example. I mean, drive to Albuquerque, drive to Phoenix. You don't see that, right? So we really shouldn't be using water for those kinds of things.
That was director of Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster University, Bonnie Baxter. You know, we've now heard from the lawyers and the scientists on all of this.
But the man who holds the hammer here is Utah's Great Salt Lake Commissioner, Brian Steed.
I actually talked to him about some of those glaring questions and what lawmakers are eyeing for water changes in 2026.
But before we get to that, let's have a quick water break.
You're listening to State Street.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Hugo Ricard-Bell.
And I'm Sean Higgins. So, you know, hearing from Emily and Bonnie was great, but it also raised some really good questions. So to get to the heart of our burning questions and get a glimpse at what he's paying attention to this legislative session, I turned to Brian Steed. He's the executive director of the Janet Quinney Lawson Institute for Land, Water, and Air at Utah State University and has been serving as the Great Salt Lake Commissioner since 2023. I started by asking him about if there's enough water to support Utah's explosive growth.
So I don't think we're close to carrying capacity that way, but I do think that it's important that we're intentional on how we grow. It's kind of a good news, bad news story. When you look at per capita water use, we actually have a downward trend. But when you look at total water use, in at least in municipal and industrial settings, we're on an upward trend. And so we have to really be mindful of that, because if we are going to accommodate that additional growth, we really do have to make sure that people are not overusing water.
So lots of people are focused on the level of Great Salt Lake. Are there other ways to measure success when it comes to water?
So I think that there are other ways to measure success. The reason we use lake level is it's a pretty easy proxy. I'm able to look on a graph and say, yep, here's where the lake is. And we know that as we get more water in the lake is healthier up to a certain point. I mean, there's a point where you get so much water in the lake, it becomes unhealthy on the other side. But we're a long ways away from even getting to that healthy range. Now, that being said, we have to be probably more sophisticated in how we account for that. One of the things that's contained in that lake level kind of matrix on what's good or what's bad is salinity levels on the south arm of the Great Salt Lake. We don't want it to have too much salt in it because that kills off brine shrimp and brine flies. And really interestingly, we've been able to adaptively manage the south arm through the use of the causeway berm between the north arm and the south arm, keep more water on the fresh or more fresh water on the south arm, and as a result of that, to keep those salinity levels really balanced out. We're pretty healthy right now in salinity. But that means we still have to worry about other things, say, you know, where the lake level is, how much exposed lake bed there is. As a state as well, I think we just got to be more mindful generally of how we use water, because Great Salt Lake is one of our water issues.
Overall, this can be a very complex problem. How do you convey these messages to people? Is it a hard message to get across?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I will say this. I mean, I'm sympathetic to the complexities. I mean, when I go talk to an agriculture producer, there's a lot of people in my city world, right? They say, we just need to shut down agriculture. But when you go talk to agriculture producers, this is not just what they do, it's who they are, right? And so trying to find those win-win solutions, I think, is really key. I would also say this. Everyone likes to blame someone else without realizing that, you know, it's us. It's not them. Us. Right? And so changing that conversation point, I think, is really necessary and key.
So let's talk about policy. HB 348, which is a dedicated water bill, and HB 410, which is an agricultural water leasing program. What would these bills do, and how would they directly help the Great Salt Lake?
Water law is complicated. And in some ways, it was intentionally set up to be that because we wanted to have a lot of stability in the system. You know, if you're diverting water from one use to another use, you're not impacting someone else's water rights. So we worked very closely with the state engineer. That's the state entity that's in charge of assigning water rights and enforcing water rights to make sure that on HB 348 that there is this dedicated water provision. And this applies both in Great Salt Lake as well as Colorado River, but it facilitates that transaction so that once we get through that, we don't have to do, you know, 16 lawyers in a room debating on what this is, but rather it's a much more facilitated process. So that's one. And 410 sets up a leasing program where we work very closely with agriculture that agriculture's bought into. It helps us to then go out and have these transactions in a more efficient way, a more streamlined way to get more water to the lake more quickly.
That said, no law will make it snow. How much can policy really help?
That's a fair question. I wish there were a law that can make it snow. If you can figure out in your research how to make that happen, that'd be great. But that being said, I can't guarantee how much water we get. I can impact how much water we use. And we've had the tremendous blessing to date of not really having to worry about water scarcity in the same way that they have in places like Las Vegas. What I guess the message might be is this. Yes, this is going to be a bummer of a water year. If it doesn't change very quickly, we're going to have some hard conversations because our snowpack is historically the lowest it has ever been. If we continue on the pathway we're on, we will have very little runoff. And that means that the things that count on that, reservoirs being filled, right? And another things that help us stretch water resources over the summer, those are going to be a lot more fragile this year than they have been in the past. And so we're going to have to go back to where we really are being quite intentional on using less water. And that's going to be, I think, a sacrifice for some. I promise you, just based on the water right system, they will have a lot of ag producers that will not get their allocation of water this year. I just think that it's really important to people understand that the Great Salt Lake can be a story of hope. There's a lot of people that worry very much that this is, you know, all is lost. And I just don't think it's fait accompli. And when you look at this, the commitment, you know, when you have the governor out there saying, we will not let this lake fail, when you have legislative leadership that is willing to commit real resources financially to it, I think there's a lot of cause for hope.
That was Great Salt Lake Commissioner Brian Steed.
So, Hugo, after hearing all of this, how are you feeling about the Great Salt Lake right now?
I think the take-home message is this is a big issue. And this is going to take not just a few bills and not just a few years, but it's going to take generations to get that Salt Lake level up to the standard that we're looking for.
Yeah, but we did hear Brian say that there is cause for hope. He and Emily Lewis have both been really encouraged by the progress that's been made so far.
Taking all that into account, scientist Bonnie Baxter isn't feeling quite so optimistic.
The legislature has helped put in a lot of policies and so forth that would have been good 20 years ago, but the timeline is a little scary right now. Like, we really need to step this up. I just think we might get into an emergency scenario before we see the effect of those things.
And you know, Hugo, lawmakers are still thinking about this. We heard about Republican Jill Coford's two water bills this session. Those are still in the early stages of the process, but they do have support from Republican leadership. And Governor Spencer Cox really doesn't want the lake to dry up either. He's been asking people to appeal to a higher power for snow this winter. At the end of the day, you can't really legislate away a drought. Sometimes you're just left with prayers for snow.
That does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Hugo Ricard-Bell.
And I'm Sean Higgins. For all you politics junkies out there, be sure to stay on top of all things Utah politics by subscribing to our newsletter. You can do that at KUER.org/State Street.
State Street happens because of our team. Jim Hill is our digital pathfinder. Amanda Anderson did our artwork.
David Childs does our audio production here at State Street. And KUER News Director Elaine Clark helps with the edits.
Caroline Ballard is our executive producer, which means she does pretty much everything.
See you next week. You know, at the end of the day, I guess we got to just pray for snow.
Life's a beach. The script says, say something funny, Sean, and politics isn't funny.
I thought that was great.
Politics is work, Sean.
Life's a beach.
From KUER.